tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 4th of June, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Yes, it's Thursday once again, which means we have with us today our resident geopolitical analyst, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, I think it will be a very good day. Today we pick up a purebred Maine Coon from people who we know. His name is Cocaine Totalitarian. That name came from when I was in the hospital in a daze because there was a camera in there that followed you everywhere. And I said to the nurse, I said, I think whoever, this is a totalitarian system, whoever did it was probably on coke because it's everywhere. And I said, oh, that's a great cat name. Yep, and there we go. Little Cokie.
So this is a new cat that you're going to pick up?
Well, we lost Marcel, as you know. And, Stanley hasn't been able to raise a kitten in a while. And that's what he does. When a kitten comes in, that's his job. He takes it, he raises it, he teaches it all the moves and all the cat stuff and makes sure it's healthy. And so I think that'll help him a little bit, too.
So
we love the Maine Coon.
A little playmate for Stanley. And finally, is this, you were telling me this is one of the largest breeds that there is. Is that correct?
The Maine Coon is the largest, by far, actually, largest naturally occurring cat breed on the planet. They get humongous.
So you're going to have a cat the size of a small dog?
Medium-sized dog.
A medium-sized dog. I'm sure you'll be in your element with that. Let's just hope that he doesn't start walking all over the keyboard while you're making your podcasts. Might be a bit difficult to shift off. Yeah. Okay.
Late.
Well, today we're going to go back and have a look at what's happening in Venezuela after the kidnapping of Maduro. And we are using globalresearch.ca for our notes. And we're particularly talking about Mauricio Javier Caroni and corruption in the post-Maduro Venezuela. A mastermind of Trump's hardline Latin American policies, Mauricio Javier Caroni no longer serves in the administration. But according to well-placed sources, he is picking who can operate in Venezuela, controlling access to the government and creating conflicts of interest. Speaking with reporters on May the 21st, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced that Venezuelan President Delcy Rodriguez was on her way to New Delhi to discuss energy issues and that he would be in India as well. "This is an important trip. I'm glad we're able to do it," Rubio chirped after explaining the trio of nations would discuss how to increase Venezuelan oil sales to India. His statement and his announcement of Rodriguez's trip before she had perfectly illustrates Washington's newfound dynamic with the Venezuelan government following over 20 years of hostile relations. The U.S. Secretary of State was apparently so intimately involved with day-to-day affairs in Caracas that he was claiming responsibility for Rodriguez's international itinerary. In fact, Rubio's influence over Rodriguez is said to be traced to one gatekeeper, former Trump Latin America envoy Mauricio Javier Caroni. Trump stated with a smile that he intended to make Venezuela America's 51st state. The Gray Zone wrote, "Mauricio Javier Caroni is picking who can operate in politics, and Delcy Rodriguez is taking instructions. a former senior U.S. official with access to leadership in both Caracas and Washington, offered the same assessment, remarking to The Gray Zone, Mauricio's calling the shots on private sector economic positions, and if anyone wants in, they have to go to him. Well, this reminds me of what Trump plans for Palestine, doesn't it? If anybody wants to lead Palestine, they have to get the okay from Trump first. And if anybody wants to work in the Venezuelan government, then they have to get authority to do so from this Mauricio Clavier Caroni, who was apparently was previously working with the American government, but now he's a private actor. But somehow he is still involved in this. Matt, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, I've been studying Venezuela for decades now, at least since Chavez came into power, because this is an example of a national socialist state. They're both nationalist and to some extent socialist. And when Chavez was in power, the economy did extremely well. But when sanctions were placed on the country, because it's so close to the U.S. and so dependent on the U.S., it actually works, unlike a place like Russia or China. Now, this also goes to show that this Clavier Caroni, you know, it doesn't matter if he's in the state or his you know, investment firm, but that's how the regime works. It is this melange of public sector and private sector power that line doesn't exist anymore, and this is just one great example of it. Now, the current so-called president, I like how you said that, by the way, Delcy Rodriguez, I'm convinced has learning disabilities. Just look at her. She can't finish any degree. I think they finally gave her a law degree somewhere, but I think she has. She's not retarded necessarily, but just somewhere in that realm. And she was Maduro's vice president and can, apparently is willing to take orders. Now the Gray Zone has been great. I don't agree with the Gray Zone on everything, but the Gray Zone has been amazing on this. They have uncovered information that there is an indictment over Rodriguez. So if she doesn't go along, she gets the same treatment as Maduro. Oh, and I should note, by the way, speaking of Maduro, that they've dropped half these charges, including the charge that the Cartel of the Suns actually existed. That's something that I said on this program, and it's been borne out to be the truth. It doesn't exist, and it never existed, and they've dropped that part of it. Now when Trump said he wants to make it a 51st state, he was half joking, half serious. But it is certainly in American territory de facto, because they could do nothing without without the permission of the American embassy. But as far as corruption is concerned, you know, when you have this is how oligarchies work. And it's being imposed on Venezuela. The president actually has no power. So-called president has no power. Power is wielded by investment firms based in the U.S., whether or not they've been in government or out of government, it doesn't matter. They have the same standing as far as their power politics is concerned. So so she has an indictment hanging over her head. If she says something that Trump doesn't like, she gets arrested just like Maduro did. That's the story. So this is one example. It's not just governments. Investment firms who are just as powerful as governments also can make these kind of have this kind of power, and he's proof of it.
Well, is this Rodriguez? Is she well liked by the people, or is she not liked by the people? I mean, she was in the previous administration. We think Maduro was liked by the people. She was his vice president. I mean, how highly do the Venezuelan people think of Rodriguez?
Yeah, she was even promoted by. You know, she has a very wealthy brother as well. Was promoted by Chavez. In addition, you know, nothing. She has no charisma. She has nothing like Maduro, or certainly nothing like Chavez. At this point, given what she says, I mean, she's destroyed Chavez's all of her social all their social welfare programs. She's going to privatize, of course, the oil firm. And she, I think she would do, even without an indictment over her head, she would do this anyway. So I can't imagine her popularity is great. If she ran for president, she would have absolutely no chance of winning. But then what's the alternative? Because she is a member of the same Socialist Party, which I contend is a National Socialist Party, as well as Chavez and Maduro. Why they promoted her so much, I think she just goes along. I think she has no choice mentally but to go along. And I think she does what she's told. And whoever has power over her, she'll say yes, and she goes along. I think it's all she's really capable of.
And also, you say that some of these charges against Maduro were dropped. Well, what about these narco-terror charges? I mean, that's what he was indicted on, wasn't it? Narco-terrorism. Is that still standing then? Or, I mean, can that still stand if they've dropped this cartel charge?
Well, there's a whole bunch of charges. Off the top of my head, I can't remember them. But being a part of a terrorist organization, which the cartels are in the Trump administration, would be a crime in and of itself. We've said on this show that the Cartel of the Suns does not exist. It's in the imagination of the media. And finally, the courts have admitted it, too. That New York Times says it, who used to promote this idea now says, no, I guess it doesn't exist after all. So we were right, as always, on this matter. Other charges, I mean, narco-terrorism is not necessarily a charge in and of itself. There could be, gun running, which is weird. And the importation of cocaine and the assistance of the importation of cocaine. There's a few others like that. I think some of those are still standing. He hasn't been in court in a while, which is odd. So I don't know what they're doing with him right now. They're going to – my gut says they're going to kill him. But because of the huge demonstrations in favor of him – when he was arrested in Caracas and elsewhere, and even in the U.S., maybe they might back off. They would like to get rid of him. And maybe that's why he hasn't been in court in so long.
Yeah, well, we certainly haven't heard much news about him since the kidnapping. Getting back to the notes here. Hand-selected by former National Security Advisor John Bolton to serve as his Latin America charge during Trump's first term, Clavier Carone no longer occupies an official government role. Instead, he has leveraged his legacy in the public sector to establish a Miami-based investment firm called the Lara Fund, which could become a key player in the MAGA financial feeding frenzy in Caracas. Described by the New York Times as the architect of Trump's tough Latin America policies, Clavier Carone is a Cuban-American regime change zealot who once engaged in fisticuffs with Cuban diplomats as a young man. During Trump's first term, he unleashed a financial flamethrower on Cuba, issuing scores of new sanctions that unraveled the Obama-era normalization policy and plunged the island back into economic misery. Clavier Carone has similarly masterminded many of the policies that define Trump's relationship with Venezuela, from its recognition of the previously unknown Juan Guaido as the country's interim president, to the deportation of hundreds of Venezuelan migrants from the US to El Salvador's maximum security CECOT prison. Many of those migrants had been prompted to journey to the US by the economically crushing sanctions unleashed at Clavier Carone's direction. Well, this seems a bit strange to me because it says here he was hand-picked by John Bolton in the first administration. Now, John Bolton has since then been extremely critical of Donald Trump. They've fallen out in a big way. So why would Trump have this person that was hand-picked by John Bolton? Why would he have him so involved in his Venezuela policies? I mean, if that was me, I would be suspicious of the person if he was hand-picked by somebody that I had fallen out with in a big way. So what do you make of that aspect of this, Matt?
Well, John Bolton is one of the chief neocons of Washington. He falls out with everybody. But this is a wealthy man who has connections everywhere. anybody who, you know, claims to love a country and then demands sanctions on it, demands even invasions, like the leader of the opposition in Venezuela, you know that they're Western educated. They have no real connection to the country. He speaks English. He was educated outside of the U.S. Outside of Venezuela. You have more connections with Venezuela than he does. His what Trump thinks is competence in this area, especially when it comes to wealth, has no connection with whether or not John Bolton likes him. John Bolton was brought to prominence by Donald Trump, and I can't imagine that he dislikes him anymore, given his policies over the last year and a half. But Bolton hated him because he said there's going to be no new wars, and neocons live for war. So that's what the falling out was about, ideologically speaking, anyway. So you have people in the Venezuelan opposition calling for the destruction of their country, or the partial destruction of their country. Well, that means they're not really a part of it. They can't possibly be. And I love this stupid line here that it's because of sanctions that the migrants have come to the U.S. I'm not sure if that's true. I think migrants come to the U.S. from Latin America because of the social benefits they get here. But it is true that unlike in a place like Russia, sanctions really do work. And you could even make the argument that the U.S. has a legitimate hegemonic interest in its own region, not Russia, not China, but in North America. You could make that argument maybe, but certainly not like this. These sanctions didn't affect governments. It didn't affect the state or the military. These sanctions affected the middle class and the lower class, and it was well known. And this is after the tremendous economic gains of the Chavez government and the early Maduro government, where you had low unemployment. Now, inflation is through the roof. Interest rates are through the roof. God knows what unemployment is. And a lot of these figures, by the way, are coming from the U.S. anyway. From the U.S. Embassy anyway. And I don't know if we've spoken about Juan Guaido before, I think it was probably before you went away. The U.S., he went to Yale. He joined Skull and Bones. He became part of the establishment. And then so they send him right back down, demanding an invasion. how what kind of a patriot can you be if you're demanding a destruction of your own country? And now, of course, you're going to get this from Rodriguez because I do think she has learning. I think she really is. Again, I don't want to say retarded, but she has. I think she has learning disabilities. So that's what she's good for that. And her brother's very wealthy. So that has that there's a connection there. But yeah, as far as he's seen as a Latin based neocon that's worthwhile, regardless of his connections to John Bolton. But he's a neocon, just like all of them are.
I don't think it's that strange that we have expats calling for sanctions on their own country. I mean, we heard this from that woman that America and the EU said was the real president of Belarus, Natalia something or other, this feminist woman who had a YouTube channel. She was calling for sanctions on Belarus. And over here, on the mainstream media, we regularly hear from supposed Iranian patriots that don't actually live in Iran that are calling for more bombing of Iran. And we hear of it from people from Russia as well that are supposed to be patriots from Russia. Navalny calling for sanctions on Russia. And I mean, it's just ridiculous. You do have to look at that and you have to say, well, how can they not be traitors to their own country when they're calling for there to be sanctions on it? And I remember Juan Guaido, and when his name popped up there, I thought, well, that's the first time we've heard of him since America announced he was the real president of Venezuela. I don't know what happened to him after that. I don't know whether he left the country or what, but there was a big media furore saying that he was the real president. So I was quite surprised, really, that they didn't actually put him in there as president again when they put Rodriguez in instead. I mean, what's happened to him since we last talked about him, Matt? Do you know?
He was, I don't know the exact case, but he stole a lot of money from his campaign office. Again, his connection with Venezuela is, he would rather be at Yale. He'd rather be in the U.S. than in Venezuela. He's alienated from that country. Again, he would have to be. So whether he was convicted or something, I don't know. I don't think he's in the country anymore. But I know that he was accused of stealing a lot of money, which, you know, that's what they're in it for, I guess. And it's no surprise. Everything we say about these people turns out to be true. And the media reports it like they were with us all along. And it's just maddening.
We do seem to make quite a lot of accurate predictions here on the Daily Nationalist at Radio Album. Well, the Grey Zone sources described the Trump veteran as the architect of the military invasion that saw Maduro spirited away to a federal penitentiary and installed Rodriguez as president following a stand down by Venezuelan security forces. If he was in charge of implementing the kinetic side, maybe Rodriguez thinks she has to listen to him on finance, the Venezuelan insider said of Clavier Carone. A report this January by investigative journalist Aram Rosten described Clavier Carone as a key backer of Rodriguez following Maduro's abduction and cited sources who claimed he exercised decisive influence over Venezuela policy despite having left the administration. Clavier Carone is now said to be at the heart of the most sensitive and consequential task Venezuela faces, the restructuring of its $170 billion in defaulted debt. Forced from several previous positions by corruption scandals and rancorous clashes, an operative with no official government position appears to be shaping the economic contours of Project Venezuela. This May 2026, the U.S. Treasury Department authorized Caracas to hire a financial advisor to assist with a Herculean task of restructuring its debt. The Venezuela government selected Centerview Partners, a chop drawer investment and financial advisory firm based in New York City. According to the former U.S. senior official, Clavier Carone's romantic partner and business colleague, Jessica Bedoya, boarded a private jet to Caracas soon after the big announcement, arriving with a top advisor from Centerview. It was her second trip to the Venezuelan capital, they said, after visiting in February to discuss financial matters. Clavier Carone did not respond to calls to his personal phone from the Grey Zone or to detailed questions sent by text and email. His partner, Bedoya, is the founder of the Lara Fund investment firm where he serves as managing partner. Her biography notes that she has also worked in the CIA and the National Security Council. Some insiders worry that her reported presence in a Venezuelan capital, together with Clavier Carone's outsized influence, could represent a conflict of interest, allowing them to steer debt restructuring agreements to their own personal benefit. Now he's got a lock on everything, the Venezuela insider said of Clavier Carone. He could say to anyone who wants to work in Venezuela, I'm the guy, I have the keys. If you want to play ball, invest with me. Now, the bit that interests me about this, apart from the corruption, is this $140, $150 billion debt that Venezuela has. I mean, I don't really know that much about it, but I mean, that would seem to be, if that debt was owed to America or American banks or American oil companies, I mean, that could be seen as a reason why America was so angry at Venezuela and why they acted in the way that they did. But, I mean, is it a genuine debt? Can you tell us a little bit more about this $150 billion debt, Matt?
Well, it seems absurd that a country with tremendous oil resources would have debt at all. They're usually creditor countries. But this is what happens when you come under sanctions. It was very different under Chavez. You know, this is typical, you know, typical Latin America nonsense, but Venezuela was supposed to be the exception. And it would have been had Chavez and his crew remained in power after Chavez's death and without American interference. I do want to say, though, that Venezuelan oil normally is of low quality. It has a lot of sulfur in it. And the processing or refining of that oil generally can only be done in the U.S. So I found it interesting that they were in India India has plenty of oil both from Russia and Iran. Why they're going to get it from Caracas, I have no idea. But center view is worth talking about. You could not get a more Jewish organization. Founded by Blair Efron and Robert Prusan. Then Robert E. Rubin, who used to be the Secretary of the Treasury, joined it. Rahm Emanuel, remember him? He used to be the mayor of Chicago in 2010. In 2010. In 2023, the former president of the Council on Foreign Relations joined them, senior counselor, in 2023. Renice Priebus in 2025 joined. He used to be the White House chief of staff and chairman of the Republican National Committee, which is, by the way, the first non-Jewish person that I've come across in this organization. So, you know, I get this company is a ethnically Jewish firm. They do what they're told. You remember what Maduro and Chavez said about Israel. They were vehemently anti-Zionist. And they said so over and over again. They hated usury. This is why I call them National Socialists. I mean, what else can you call them? But this organization has people in it, you know, first of all, who have no background in this stuff, but they're powerful Jews. And they got this gig without any bidding, without any competition, to restructure a debt that shouldn't exist in the first place. And it's, you know, again, they're created by the U.S. There wouldn't be a debt if everything went as normal. You have to remember the tremendous economic gains that came under Chavez and Maduro prior to the sanctions. You know, poverty was slashed to almost nothing. Peasants were given the land that they worked. You know, this isn't communism. This is National Socialism. They believed in private property. And that was the problem. And that's part of the reason why you have Jewish firms now controlling. And very fact that they were authorized to do this. The U.S. Treasury Department authorized Caracas to hire a financial advisor. That pretty much tells me Venezuela is a colony just like Ukraine is. It also shows you the power of debt in controlling people. It was defaulted on, but they won't allow that anymore. So, and the romantic connection with Jessica Bedoya is funny, but that's just an extra layer of corruption here. We'll read about here in a second.
I guess the restructuring of debt, I mean, just have a little look at that and what that involves. I guess that involves banks or corporations saying, well, we'll take on that bit of debt there, so you owe us that debt, and we'll take a percentage of your profits from this industry here, or we'll take control of this corporation there as payment of the debt. Is that the way that it works, Matt?
Yeah, there may be some limited forgiveness in certain areas, but yeah, the state oil firm is being privatized. A lot of state firms are being privatized, which is awful for and being bought up by foreign firms, which means that there's no way Venezuela is going to be an independent country anymore. They were nationalized in the first place by Chavez. And so this is how they do it. You know, they can order Venezuela around. So in terms of restructuring, limited forgiveness in certain areas, they will, the debt's been consolidated. Obviously, the U.S. Treasury is connected to it. And now I don't think it had anything to do with the abduction of Maduro by any means. The restructuring of the country is really what they mean by restructuring of the debt. And you couldn't get a more cooperative, useful idiot in power than Rodriguez.
So you mean removing some of these social policies? So in effect, they will say, well, we'll reduce the debt by a certain amount if you reprivatize these industries that you nationalized before. So it's effectively stopping things from being owned nationally and transferring them over to private corporations, I guess. The former US official said Javier Carone was raising capital for his Lara fund while he served as a special government employee at the State Department. While Bedoya was running the firm, they said Javier Carone was leveraging his position inside the Trump administration to pitch potential investors. When Trump appointed Javier Carone to serve as the first American president of the Inter-American Development Bank, the IDB, in 2020, he hired Bedoya as his chief of staff. A couple's secret romance at the bank triggered an embarrassing ethics investigation after a handwritten contract was discovered showing they had agreed to pursue absolute happiness and included a clause with punishments including candle wax and a naughty box if either party breached the deal. And that's just a bit salacious, isn't it? I mean, why do they really sort of print this stuff? It doesn't say what this contract was about apart from pursuing absolute happiness. I mean, it doesn't show that they had a contract here to defraud somebody. They had a contract to make a load of money out of this, just to go for absolute happiness. Weird candle wax and a naughty box, but why was that? Why was that actually brought up during the ethics investigation? Was it written on company note paper or something? It does seem a bit bizarre to me. What do you make of it, Matt?
Well, we'll see in the next paragraph how he increased his paramour's salary by 40% in less than a year. They go on romantic getaways and use the bank's credit card. And, the tragedy of it all. Oh, and by the way, on what universe is candle wax sexy? What the hell's a naughty box? What's in it? Psychologically speaking, this is who we're dealing with here. I don't want to know what's in the naughty box the more I think about it. Remember, Chavez was developing his own Bank of the South, I believe it was called, to get away from the Western banking system. And he died of cancer. He wasn't murdered. They tried to get rid of him in a lot of other ways. And Maduro, I mean, it's very hard to be as charismatic as Chavez. Maduro didn't, by comparison. I mean, you can't get any less, the worst is, of course, Rodriguez. But, following Chavez is very difficult. But, the bank was meant to get away from the system. Again, why I call Venezuelan government a national socialist state. The left in America takes this as their own, and it's not. They refuse to talk about how they talked about the Jews all the time. The Israeli investments were a part of all of this. And this is just, I think, a little window into the bizarre psychology of oligarchs. And this is how oligarchy works. They support what they could do stuff like this. And they will get away with stuff like this. They're too wealthy and connected to do anything else. And I don't know who discovered this. It probably was written on bank stationery. Probably was. And it was a little embarrassing. But to these people, I think that's like a Tuesday.
So it's not that important on its own, but when you look at that along with all the other defrauding and corruption that was going on, it basically shows this connection between the two of them. An independent probe ordered by the IDB discovered that Javier Carone had increased his paramour's salary by 40%, a $133,000 reward in less than a year. Investigators also found that the couple had racked up expenses on an IDB credit card during romantic getaways. Javier Carone refused to participate in the investigation while accusing its authors of fabrications. In the end, IDB governors voted unanimously in favor of his firing. The US government endorsed their decision. President Javier Carone's refusal to fully cooperate with the investigation and his creation of a climate of fear of retaliation among staff and borrowing countries has forfeited the confidence of the bank staff and shareholders and necessitates a change in leadership, they wrote. Javier Carone announced he was leaving the State Department to return to his Lara fund. His departure gave the appearance that he had been forced out of his job. However, he maintained his clout throughout his direct line to Rubio. The former US official told The Gray Zone that Javier Carone is now angling to become a Cuban-American version of Jared Kushner, the Trump son-in-law who has leveraged his proximity to the president and role as Middle East negotiator to rake in billions from Israel and several Gulf monarchies, despite having no official government title. To do so, he has allegedly inserted himself into the Byzantine process of restructuring Venezuela's debt. I mean, this is just one that we're learning about here, but I should imagine a lot of the people that are sort of orbiting Donald Trump are people like this, and they're selling access to Trump or selling access to other parts of the government. And then when they leave the government after a certain amount of time, they're all working for companies and businesses that are making money off the back of the fact that this guy worked in there and has all this insider knowledge. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of people in that organization, as you were saying, Matt, were Jewish. I mean, he says here he wants to be the American version of Jared Kushner. Is this Javier Carone? Is he Jewish like Jared Kushner is?
I have not discovered that. No, but he will never, ever say anything against their interests whatsoever. I mean, look, when they use the IDB credit card, I mean, you know, naughty boxes aren't cheap, you know, so he's got to use someone else's money. He says they're fabrications. Everyone knows it's not. But, you know, he's been removed from pretty much every job he's ever had for stuff like this.
Yet he still has them. Yeah, he's still working for them secretly.
It doesn't matter. You do one thing, and you have a job in America, you do one thing wrong, you get fired. Normal people. For these guys, they could destroy a whole country, destroy this economy, and they get hired by someone else. This has been going, the same thing goes for Russia and Ukraine. It's bizarre. But again, and candle wax, I'm stuck on that. I know the concept, but I don't understand how, where it comes from. I don't how people find this erotic. I don't get it. And I guess that's not cheap either if they want to have real beeswax candles rather than the paraffin.
I think it might be the melted wax.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's worse or not.
Well, when the Trump administration announced that Venezuela could hire a financial advisor to assist with its sovereign debt, Rodriguez initially planned a public bidding process for the coveted position. But then Javier Carone issued support for Centerview, leading to the firm's selection. And you've added there, some in the opposition have speculated that Centerview was chosen because one of its partners, Mathieu Bigasse, is a self-described pro-market socialist who previously worked on deals with Maduro and Venezuela's state-owned PDVSA oil company. What does pro-market socialist mean then, Matt?
I do not know. That doesn't make sense. I think what that might mean is something that actually I don't mind. I've read about it before, is, you know, worker controlled industries, but still within a free market. I think that might be what it is, which I have no problem with. Although worker controlled industries have struggled a little bit after eight, 9 hour shift. No one wants to go to a meeting talking about, you know, financial stuff. But you know what? I've backtracked on that. I don't think that was the reason. I think the main reason is that it's completely Jewish, and the only reason that that a guy like Priebus was brought in just last year is because he's not Jewish. So they could point to him and say, yeah, it's not a totally Jewish organization. Otherwise, this group couldn't be more Jewish. And of course, that's the case with a lot of these financial titans out there. You know, BlackRock is entirely Jewish at the top end. Goldman Sachs is a bank. You know, it's depressing. But where there's oil, there's going to be money. There's going to be interest. And but as I said, you know, keep in mind, Venezuelan oil is very eccentric. You can't use it in a lot of places. You know, you have to be able to refine it, and to get rid of that sulfur, there's a specific American method of doing it. There's one place in Louisiana that they do it. And I suppose, you know, so you can't just buy Venezuelan oil. I'm not sure about Indonesian oil, but Venezuelan oil has so much sulfur in it. It's a very impure. So still, though, the U.S. has been able to use it over the years. And once that was stopped, the debt was brought up and all of this, you know. But none of this stuff here is inconsistent with oligarchy. This is how oligarchy operates. Every presidential administration since Nixon, after Nixon, has been like this. The line between a government office and a powerful, say, investment bank doesn't exist. They go back and forth. They have networks both in the state as well as the private sector. That's why I use the term regime to refer to the power structure, the ruling class, because it's not just the state. Big companies. I mean, you know, you have the American debt or any debt owed to private banks, private persons. Well, usually the debtor listens to what the creditor wants them to do. So governments tend to be weaker than any kind of organized creditor. Now Russia has been, you know, they talk about Venezuelan gold. There's no gold there. You can't have this kind of debt and have any gold there. But because you have a method of refining this oil, which makes it a little bit more expensive, it doesn't matter. They still want to get behind it and control it. And there are other firms, too, in other areas that are going to be privatized. Lots of people are going to get fired. And you're going to have essentially the IMF austerity measures placed on Venezuela. Can you imagine? They've been living under austerity to begin with. Now you're going to get even more because of this idiot. And I mean that clinically speaking, Rodriguez and this character here, Corona. But this is how oligarchy functions.
Well, it's interesting how they said they were going to put it up to public tender and then they were just told, no, just take on Centerview instead. In recent weeks, Javier Corona has attempted to undermine financial advisors who had been working with the Venezuelan government to restructure its debt since 2014. When Javier Corona's partner, Bedoya, arrived in Caracas in May 26 on a private jet with Pegase, she began pushing to remove the advisory mandate from David Syed, a seasoned French lawyer who had advised Caracas on debt-related issues for over a decade and is considered incorruptible. The Gray Zone wrote, "The effort to push Syed out created a lot of tension. You can't understand debt restructuring by parachuting in without his knowledge." Syed did not respond to the Gray Zone's request for comment. Hamuda Shekier, another Centerview partner who works on Venezuela's debt, did not respond to calls and text messages sent to his personal phone. I do wonder if they're sort of name-dropping a bit by saying, look, we've got all this access to personal phones, personal text numbers, you know, the journalists are saying, because they keep bringing it up that it wasn't answered to when they sent calls and texts. It seems to be saying, look, we actually have your private phone numbers here as well. So there's obviously, there's a mole in there that's feeding information and phone numbers to the Gray Zone. Well, just before leaving the State Department in May 2025, Javier Corona convinced Rubio not to renew a sanctions waiver that allowed Chevron to sell Venezuelan oil in the US market. In doing so, he eliminated a mechanism which was explicitly designed to promote transparency and prevent local officials from skimming cash. Well, I think we can understand why they eliminated that mechanism. Got any comments on that, Matt?
Well, you know, Chevron, you know, they used to be Citgo. And that is long gone, has been taken over. Now, I think this article, you mentioned how this article functions, how these guys are, doing a lot of name dropping, David Syed and these other people. This article does rely on a lot of anonymous sources. And maybe too much. The only reason I'm using it is because it does make sense. It does fall together. Now, David Syed is actually a Pakistani. Believe it or not, he has an Irish mother. And the family eventually moved to Venezuela, and of course was educated at anywhere but Venezuela. And he's worked all over the world as a lawyer. And Syed was counsel to the Republic of Venezuela, Ministry of Economy and Finance. And getting rid of him was a necessity. Now, I don't know if he's actually incorruptible. I wonder about that. He's an advocate of Latin American integration, you know, like an EU down there. But, you know, he I don't know if he's incorruptible, but he's at least in the way. But he does also doesn't have, you know, the one thing you're going to notice, and we've talked about this a thousand times on this show, that people get positions that they have no reason to get. They have absolutely no knowledge or background on any of these. We talked about this in the defense world. Rodriguez is the worst. She was given all these positions. You know, she flunked out of so many schools, and she's she was given at least five or six positions over the years in the socialist government's administration. Oligarchy doesn't use – this is not a, essentially, it's not a market system. They create markets. They don't respond to them. You know, oil prices aren't based on a market. Oil prices are set by a handful of oil firms. But center view, again, very important. Former president of the Council on Foreign Relations is there. You have former White House chief of staff. You have very, very, very powerful Jews. But even Syed himself is a lawyer. You know, what's his background in terms of restructuring debt in the hydrocarbon sector? I simply don't know. But these people are given these positions because they know somebody, because they're pliable, because they'll do the right thing or the wrong thing. Either way, Syed was in the way and he had to go.
Oh, so I think it's quite essential to democracy, isn't it? The way that democracy is run is that they'll just take somebody, they could really just take a random person and just put them into this important role and expect it to function. The same as they do with government. They'll put people into ministerial roles. They'll swap them around every 6 months, every year. They'll put somebody in charge of prison, say, who's got no experience of actually being in prison. And that seems to be an essential part of democracy. I mean, I can understand why people criticise democracy because of that component. But it does seem to be quite central to it. Well, in January 2026, after abducting Maduro, the Trump administration granted confidential licences to a pair of notoriously corrupt trading houses. Vitol, and you put Dutch, handles about 350 billion tons of oil per year. It is not publicly traded and has done business with Iran after the sanctions. And Trafigura, based in Singapore, world's largest trader in metals and second in oil, $244 billion in gross revenue as of 2023 to export Venezuelan oil. So they're the ones exporting the oil. The deal came months after Trump's re-election campaign received a whopping $6 million donation from a senior trader at Vitol. Robert Barkman, an analyst at the Swiss watchdog Public Eye, told the Washington Post at the time, Trump is taking advantage of firms that know how to circumvent regulation. Both companies have been caught engaging in a series of elaborate bribery schemes across Latin America and Africa. In 2020, the Department of Justice forced Vitol to pay a $135 million penalty for bribing officials for licenses in Mexico, Ecuador, and Brazil. Trafigura paid a similarly staggering fine in 2024 for a lucrative bribery scheme in Brazil. In the US, Vitol was rung up by the California Attorney General for manipulating spot market prices of oil. But almost as soon as the Trump administration entered office, it neutered the DOJ Corrupt Foreign Practices Division, charged with enforcing the judgments against Trafigura and Vitol on the grounds that it was, quote, impeding America's national security objectives, close quote. And that may well be a reference to the publicly made national security objectives, because part of that was America taking a big influence over the countries that were next to America, South America, is basically America was going to have a far larger influence on South America than it did before. That was going to be seen as America's sphere of influence. And we did talk about that quite a few podcasts back. Well, Trump, for his part, has essentially admitted Venezuelan oil profits are channeled into a slush fund for his international rampage. We've taken out so much oil in Venezuela, we've paid for the cost of the war with Iran about 25 times over, the president boasted during a May 23 campaign rally. While the president's claim is absurd, as Venezuela presently exports only about 1 million barrels of oil a month, hardly enough to cover a full day of warfare, it did reveal his avaricious attitude towards the entire operation. I mean, it just looks like corruption on top of corruption to me. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
My final thoughts is that this is normal when you live in a you know, democracies, liberal democracies are essentially oligarchies. In other words, to function in a liberal democracy, you have to have money. You have to have wealthy backers. You have to have the media support, or else you don't go anywhere. Trafigura and Vitol, these are just two powers that no one's ever heard of before, who controls things from the background while politicians either take the blame or the praise. This is what oligarchy is. You have politicians who get elected who claim to run the economy. They don't. These are the people and these organizations that no one's ever heard of. And it's not the Trump administration is just one out of many. This happens everywhere, every administration in every liberal democratic country. This is the nature of that system. Yes, it's postmodern capitalism. That's true. Connected with that political system, it is pure. It's a breeding ground for monsters, and that's why you get people like Corona, who gets fired from every job because he is a complete. I don't even know what word to call him without getting sounding vulgar, but and removing anyone that gets in his way, taking over things he has no knowledge of. Just for the sake of power or whoever he's screwing at the time. And for Donald Trump to say this, yeah, don't worry about the money. We're going to use the Venezuelan oil for that. And of course it was a lie. And none of this had to happen. Of course, none of this had to happen. The truth is that this country, Venezuela, would have been a very wealthy first world state under a national socialist government if the U.S. has kept its hands off it. We know that from the economic statistics back then. And I love how these dumb Republicans say, you know, the destruction of Venezuela is because of socialism. Well, this isn't Marxism. They believe in private property there, so it's not Marxism. It's not Leninism. So they don't know what they're talking about. It's the destruction of an economy based on sanctions and now treating it like a colony where they have to ask permission to do things. In terms of the budget, that's how you know it's a colony. And the only people who suffer are your ordinary Venezuelans. And this is done with a U.S. that doesn't want to do this anymore. The population doesn't want to do this anymore. The government is drowning in debt, is so overstretched militarily. And the only reason that Maduro was kidnapped is because both Maduro and the defense minister told the military to stand down. Maduro willingly went. Gray Zone actually reported on that not too long ago. Maduro said, we don't want a massive war to destroy this country, because it would have been. Maduro was Venezuela's armed to the teeth. But he said, no, I'll go. I'll sacrifice myself for everyone else. And that's exactly what he's doing right now.
That must be why it was so easy to just kidnap him like that. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.